Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. Most of you know that one of my favorite people out there is the bravest, one of the loudest voices for truth and transparency. She is fearless. She has been doing this for decades and she is not stopping. In fact, she's only getting better and bolder. Thank you for joining me, Lara Logan.
Mel, thank you for having me.
God, we have been on a journey the last few years. I've crossed paths with you all over the country and you are not stopping. But you know what? You don't go for the little issues. You go straight in for what really needs to be told, what people don't want to be out there. And you do it so brilliantly. And this time, I am so excited to have you back to talk about what you have done with the January 6th. You and I both know many of the people that have been persecuted, some people still behind bars, some people not even charged. But the horror and the sadness of what's happened to these people's lives, to their families, is inexplicable to the average person. So tell me first and foremost, why did you embark on being the voice for the voiceless, honestly, in this January 6th travesty?
Well, I'm always drawn to stories that haven't been told. And so I was shocked when I watched Jake Lang's documentary. You know Jake Lang. He's a January 6th defendant who's been in prison for years now without a trial, a political prisoner behind bars without, you know, so much for innocent until proven guilty, right? And Jake did a documentary. It was the first one that he did. And when I watched it, I was like, I learned about the death of Roseanne Boyland. And I just couldn't believe that I didn't know her name, and I didn't know she died that day, and I didn't know anything about what happened to her. And so my first feeling was guilt. You know, I really, because that's part of what I do, right? That's who I am, is I tell these stories. And I couldn't believe there was such a big event like January 6th and something as significant as the death of someone. I mean, when you stop caring that people have died, then what's left to care about, you know? And so quite out of the blue, unrelated to this, a few weeks later, Jake Lang called me from prison and said, you know, I want you to do Roseanne's story. And I, of course, ended up doing it completely independently, but I just couldn't believe that it was like, well, okay, God, you know, you really want me to tell this woman's story. And it motivated me because I had been wanting to tell her story anyway. I kind of knew when I discovered this, I knew that I was going to do something about this. And then I approached Ben Swan at Truth in Media, because Ben, as a real journalist, he'd been wanting to support me, and we'd been looking, trying to figure out how to do something. And this fell into it. And then Ben said, well, I want you to do more than Roseanne's story. Well, let's do her story and let's do some other pieces, particularly, you know, looking at some of these other issues. And I said, okay, I'm in. Right. So I was lucky to have someone who was willing to put in the effort to get this financed, because it's not cheap. You know, and we've done it sort of bare bones, but even doing it that way, you know, big two camera interviews with a great crew who's used to shooting for 60 minutes, that kind of thing is so expensive. And most people don't want to pay for that these days. They look at all the success that people like yourself or Glenn Beck or Charlie Kirk or someone has had, you know, from sitting behind a microphone and doing lives with people. And they were like, well, you know, that's a better return on my money, right? But I'm, you know, Ben and I are fighting for that kind of investigative scripted journalism, right? That I did at 60 Minutes that should not belong only to one side or any side, right? It belongs to all of us. And I'm one of the few people who knows how to do what 60 Minutes does.
Right.
So I want to share that. And, you know, every member of the team is getting very, very familiar with that now. And I'm hoping to multiply that ultimately. Right. I mean, because we need as many people as possible doing that kind of quality work.
Yeah, I think it's really important what you're saying. I had worked in the media for 20 years myself, and I honestly believe that all of it needs to be brought into the mix. And the most important thing about what you and Ben are doing is you're putting out there the level of quality, the technical know-how, the background of writing it right, putting it together, editing it right. We have to remember some of the most powerful stories have been told on 60 Minutes and Dateline and 48 Hours. These are huge conglomerates owned by giant mega corporations. They cost a lot of money to do, but they are tend to be the most powerful to tell full stories. You can tell other stories and clips and that, but to build a story from beginning to end and kind of get into all the pieces, you need that format. And I'm so excited that you guys are bringing that to the table independently without, as you and I both know, when there are executive producers and then executive producers answer to executives for the network and they answer to executives for whoever owns the network, which is usually a multinational corporation, the journalist gets really hamstringed, even in a 60 Minutes, especially most people have seen The Insider. You've done it all your time where they're kind of like, yeah, well, you can go there, but you have to stop. So now you have the format of long form storytelling where you don't have to stop. And that is going to be the big change in taking that model from the network news aspect, putting it into the independent world, and also not having to stop when you know it gets too heavy for the corporation. And I think it's beautiful. And what you've done, and we're running a trailer at the end of this interview, what you've done is shown that it can be done. And I hope that this really motivates people, because I come from the film background, and I'm seeing people all over the country trying to figure out, well, how can we do it here? Because we can do it. We just need to put together a team that has the inspiration and the ambition to do that. So you guys have done that, and you're going to do many more things. And this one right now is focusing on January 6th. What of other than Roseanne's story, which is, I'm so glad you're telling it, and I've known about it for a long time, but what of all the things that you saw was, you tend to be somebody who's very emotional, very compassionate, really looks at the empathy and where is this story, the human aspect. What has been the most surprising to you that you learned digging into all of this?
You know, Mel, it's kind of like when people would say to me, what was your favorite story that you ever did at 60 Minutes? You know, it's so hard because they're like your babies, right? Yes. And you're giving birth over and over, because if you it takes so much of you, you give everything that you've got. And if you didn't, if it wasn't in some way that it touched you, you wouldn't have taken that on in the first place.
Right.
And I just keep thinking about, there's so many things in our journey along the way. You know, something happened to me during this series that has never happened to me before. Don Hewitt used to say, if you can make a man cry on camera, you got gold. You know, that was a Don Hewitt saying at 60 Minutes. And when I was interviewing a woman whose name is Sarah McAbee, whose husband Colt McAbee has been in prison, I'm sure you know her story.
Yes, I do.
Going on 3 years without trial. And Colt was a deputy sheriff in Tennessee. And he was there trying to help and trying to save Roseanne Boylan, but also a police officer was dragged into the crowd. He put his body over this officer's body and shielded him from the crowd and helped him stand up and took him back to the officers. And of course, you know, the government has charged him with attacking the police, assaulting a police officer, not giving him an award for saving a police officer. And when I was talking to Sarah and she was describing how this FBI agent took the stand in his when they were in court on the issue of pretrial detention, and the FBI was arguing for why they needed to keep Colt McAbee in prison before his trial, this agent took the stand and said, showed this video from the police officer's body cam. And this officer is now down, you know, with a sort of the craziness going on around him. And Colt McAbee is on top of him. And they claim that he's assaulting the officer. And of course, he's not. And what they did to get away with that lie in the courtroom was they said that there was a glitch on the video and it had no sound.
Oh,
because, of course, if you listen to the sound, you will hear Colt McAbee saying, hey, man, are you okay? And the officer, you know, I'm trying to help you. And the officer says, I know you are.
Oh,
and he says, I need you to stand up. Do you think you can stand? I'll help you. And the officer says, yes, I think I can stand, but not yet. And he says, okay, tell me when you're ready. And they have this whole conversation and Colt saves him and escorts him back to that line of officers. And one of them thanks him for saving this guy. I believe, I could have this wrong, but I believe there's conversation about it later as well amongst police officers. And how do we know all of this? We know it because of one man, Gary McBride.
Wow.
And anyone who knows January 6th probably knows Gary McBride. They've probably heard of his name. Who is Gary McBride? I mean, he's just a dude, you know? He's just a dude from oil and gas background in the great state of Texas, as they say, where I am right now.
Yeah.
You know, and he's watching what happens on January 6th from his couch. And he is so outraged by the deception and the lies pushed on the American people and what to him is an obvious setup that he starts to dig into this. And so he's really become one of the great voices of for the truth about January 6th because he has seen more hours of video and gone through all this material, meticulously. I love when people say, oh, you know, like, I can never get hold of Gary. And it's yeah, because he's still up half the night trying to figure out how to get all this out and for how people to find the truth. And so, you know, these are the things that happened to me along the way. When I was talking to Sarah McAbee about this in the interview, and she was describing what had happened to her husband and how he's been behind bars for so long, I just got, for the first time in more than 35 years of being a journalist, I started crying.
Yeah.
And she wasn't even crying. Okay. Normally, you know, I've teared up in an interview before when someone I'm interviewing is tearful.
Right.
But it never happened to me that I was so overwhelmed by the injustice of it, that you can take a good man who's done nothing but serve his community, who's a brave, strong guy, he's got two awards as a deputy sheriff for helping to save people. And this guy is rotting in prison without ever being convicted of a crime.
I know.
Are you kidding me? And so, you know, we know that there's injustice and we know that life isn't fair, but I had just never experienced that in all these years. And I've been in some truly heart-wrenching situations before, but that was the first time that I was the one that started crying first.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is that you have, and you've put yourself in those situations prior to this, you were working and you will go back to working on the worst of what can possibly happen, which is child trafficking. And then you went right into this. So now we're in this realm. But here's another thing that I do want to ask you about, which is the lack of humanity, the level of bloodlust, the sheer satisfaction, self-satisfaction. When you read some of these transcripts of these prosecutors in DC and these judges,
amazing.
It is, I cannot believe that these are real people. It sounds like it could only be in some kind of dystopian, evil, scary movie. The sheer enjoyment, it appears, in reading some of these transcripts out of these people's mouths that are doing this to human beings, as if they have no humanity, no empathy, no compassion, which is what you are known for. So to be reporting on this and watching these people in these positions of power, which is shocking as it is, because the federal court in DC is such a disgrace. But how about that? These people that have shown no humanity, no empathy, no compassion for a human life, or multiple human lives?
Well, you know, it's a very good point that you raise. And I had many moments where I just shook my head. I thought about all of those FBI agents all over the country. They know that there's nothing normal about the January 6th investigations. They know that they would normally be in charge and they're being dictated to by Washington, D.C., that there's a political dimension to this that is driving these cases, not the law, right? And I love people like Trenis Evans from Condemned USA because, you know, Trenis tortured those agents, right, all the way to prison when they raided his house. And he was like, really? Guys, like, this is what you signed up for. This makes you feel good. This is what you wanted to be when you became an FBI agent. You wanted to raid the homes of decent American citizens put guns in the face of his 14-year-old son for a misdemeanor,
right?
For a nonviolent misdemeanor charge that is covered by the First Amendment. You feeling big now, boys? I mean, there was just an arrest that was all over Twitter. These FBI agents are rolling up. They've got M4s and body armor and, you know, chest rigs, and they've got the pistol strapped to them on the outside of their pants. They look like CIA contractors or military.
Right.
You know, what the hell are you doing? What the hell are you doing? You know, you're doing this to time and time again. You can hear the stories of the FBI raiding people's homes with battering rams. I mean, my goodness, they went into this tiny town in northern Minnesota to arrest the James boys, you know, and they've got all these vehicles and lights. And I mean, there are people who have offered to turn themselves in, and they don't want you to turn yourself in. So what has happened to these FBI agents? In Matthew Perna's case, Matthew Perna's episode, first one dropped today, in Matthew Perna's case, you know, he turned himself in. He'd never been in trouble, no record, never had a parking ticket in his life. They still came to his house with a whole bunch of agents and, you know, and put his family under great stress. Why are you doing this? You don't have to do it this way. And these prosecutors that are going into court, they're all getting their orders from above, you know, because these are politically driven persecutions more than legal cases. And so they're seeking enhancements at the sentencing phase, right? Which is, so what is a terrorist enhancement? Well, everybody gets a score. When they go into court convicted of a crime or they've pled guilty, they've got a score for sentencing. And you can depart from what's the normal sentence for that, or you can adjust. You can adjust up, you can adjust down. Well, what are they doing? They're seeking, in some cases, a terrorist enhancement. So basically, you want to get somebody sentenced and punished as if they were a terrorist, but you never charged them with terrorism because you knew it wouldn't stick. You knew they weren't, they did not meet the legal definition of a terrorist case. So you didn't charge them because you couldn't, because you didn't have evidence, because it wasn't true. But you're going to slap on as much punishment as you can. You're going to punish them as a terrorist because that helps keep up your lie, right? The false narrative that this was a terrorist attack of some kind, you know. And you're right. The prosecutors, the judges, people need to look very carefully at what these judges are saying in court, because how they're not recusing themselves from the next case, I don't understand. I mean, if that's not a judge, you know, sort of going off in court and wailing on some of these defendants as if they're insurrectionists and so on. Nobody's been convicted of insurrection, not even the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, right? No. Because I don't think there is a charge for insurrection. I could be wrong on that. I'm not a legal expert.
I have not seen one, no. And also, the other thing is that these judges are reciting as they give their, you know, monologue about why it's so bad. They're saying things that are provably untrue. Like I've been on the phone. Right. Like they're saying that five people were killed. No, just a couple Trump supporters, honestly. And they're saying things that are just, they're just already proven untrue. But if the judge says it, then it's fine. And I do encourage people to go look at, there are transcripts out there, at what these judges are actually saying. And it makes you think, you know, my thing is that it is coming from above. And what you are talking about is a conspiracy of some kind that is behind the scenes. And all of these people are acquiescing to what end? That's for me. I just don't I do understand. I believe that this is all about, I call it a Fed surrection, but I honestly believe that this is to make all of us, this is why I say the January 6th defendants are all of us, because it is to make all of us too scared to question the government, this installed regime, to question anything they do at any time for fear that we will too end up being arrested. But at this point, if we don't stand up and face that fear, and if that happens, we will survive like the rest of them, then we have to. But when you've been going through all of this, do you see a bigger picture motive that's clear to you, that is obvious, or are we still having to go by what they are saying and telling us? Because the January 6th committee was such a circus, and you and I both know your documentary series that you're putting on right now is produced better than this. But the January 6th thing was produced by an ABC producer. It was a Hollywood production.
Yes. It was just theater. You know how many times the January 6th committee mentioned Roseanne Boylan's name?
Zero.
Yeah. I mean, a woman that died that day, you know, right there on the steps of the Capitol. I mean, she was officially declared dead later that evening in the hospital. But when they have her in the back behind the tunnel and they're working on her, one of the medics who's working on her says, "I got no pulse, but I've got, I'm going to mess up the term that he used," but he used a medical term that basically means that there's still breathing of some kind going on there. And it's what doctors in the ER, you know, there's things that they can do to bring you back. I think right. It's called agonal breathing, right? And so when you have agonal breathing, you're not officially dead, but you're very, very, very close. And they were never able, no pulse, you know, they were never able to bring Roseanne back.
Right.
And for the January 6th committee to say that this is about justice and they completely and utterly ignore Roseanne Boylan, they ignore her death as if it didn't happen. Well, I mean, that tells you everything. That's the first sign that you should look very closely at what happened to Roseanne Boylan, right? Because I'm not making that as a political statement. I'm saying that as a journalist or as a human being, if you want to know if somebody's lying to you, If they say that they're all about one thing, but they do things that obviously go against that, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
You know, and not only that, I mean, in terms of when you say, you know, what have we seen in terms of this? This is really very obviously a setup. And there, in fact, I found a video where you can hear one police officer telling other officers, "We've been set up. Right. They set us up, man. They set us up." Right. I mean, there were officers on the day who recognized that because they know how these things should really be done. And they know they weren't getting the support. They weren't getting the resources that they were asking for. But more than that, they knew that they were not in a position to stop this. Because if you wanted to secure the Capitol, there's 4,000 things that you would have done differently. Philip Anderson says it in the trailer there. You know, he says, if they, bottom line, Laura, if they didn't want this to happen, it wouldn't have happened. And when you look at the very first breach, you know, the now sort of infamous pictures of Ray Epps and Ryan Samsel and these others coming up to that first barricade on the path leading up to the Capitol, you didn't have 2,000 people there at that breach. You didn't have 10,000. You didn't have 100,000. You didn't even, I don't even think you had 200. Right. You had a handful of people who, and three police officers, and there was a whole swath of the ground right next to that that didn't have any police officers.
Right.
So you weren't trying to secure this building. So which is it? You regard Trump and his supporters as the greatest existential threat to the United States of America. You regard white supremacists and white-skinned people as terrorists. You're so afraid of them that you've got to put in, I don't know how many undercover agents and confidential sources and so on and so on. You've got them strewn throughout the crowd, but you don't need any security. Okay, yeah, that's not true. That didn't make any sense. So you didn't want to secure that building because you wanted this to happen.
Yeah, and the timing is very bizarre too. I hope people understand that this breach and that everything that was going on, because it also interrupted what was going on in Congress at a time when they were about to go through some of the elector stuff and they had to break before that. And then they came back in the middle of the night to finish their work. But people should look into also the timing. Also, Donald Trump was still speaking at the time of the breach. So a lot
they
of
say
things
that Donald
don't make
Trump
sense.
Is the reason everyone went to the Capitol, but he hadn't even finished his speech. And if you were a Donald Trump supporter, you were at the ellipse and you were listening to Donald Trump. And not the timing you're talking about, I know exactly what you mean. It's amazing to me that this keeps getting lost in the conversation. They keep saying in the official narrative, in the false narrative, that people went there to stop the certification of the election. The only thing that was stopped because of the chaos of January 6th was exactly what the protesters wanted, which was for the results in contested states to be sent back to those states for the electors in those states to investigate them. That's what they wanted. That's the only thing that did not happen because of the events of January 6th.
Right.
So you could argue, right? You could certainly argue that those events were orchestrated to prevent that from happening.
That is
which
what
would
I
mean
think.
It wouldn't be the protesters who were behind that.
No, that is what I think. I don't believe in coincidences at all. And the timing is too crazy. And the worst part is that when they reconvened, they should have reconvened from there. And that's not what happened. They reconvened and skipped that whole process. So something happened.
Oh, you mean they changed all the rules?
Yes.
You know, kind of like COVID and the election.
Right. So something happened after they all, you know, and then they were all talking about how they were running. And then now you have videos of like Howley and other people not running. But what happened, though, something happened between when they were evacuated and when they came back, that entire process was totally scrubbed, skipped, not done. And that is the violation, in my opinion.
Well, I can tell you what happened in some cases, because I've spoken to a number of different members of Congress about this, is that a number of Republican congressmen who stated beforehand that they were going to vote against certification of those results, and they were going to vote to send it back to the state electors, who are really the ones certifying it, right? So it's more a vote to approve the certification. Right. They're not certifying them. That's the state electors' job. But they were going to vote to send it back to those electors. They weren't going to vote to approve their certification.
Right.
And once the violence happened, they changed their minds. They were pressured into voting and going along with it.
They were pressured.
That's what they did. They folded.
They folded.
And not all of them, by the way. Louis Gohmert didn't fold. Right.
Right.
I mean, there were others that didn't fold. Scott Perry, I don't think he folded.
Right.
But what they suddenly found was that they were abandoned
and
by a lot of
chaos.
Their colleagues.
And they were thrown into chaos and nobody's thinking straight. And they were creating something. Now, something else happened. I don't know, because I only saw the first episode. If you do cover it, and I was not surprised about it. I had crossed paths with her when I lived in Hollywood. Nancy Pelosi's daughter and her husband were there shooting a documentary. They have footage from the day before. There's behind the scenes footage of her saying it wasn't an insurrection. It wasn't that bad. The daughter. They have video of Nancy Pelosi that having been on a movie set enough times is totally, it had to have had multiple takes. I watched it. I know that this was not a spontaneous conversation from Nancy Pelosi. Did you come across anything having to do with Pelosi and her daughter and the husband that were apparently filming a documentary the night before, the day of, and everything? Did you look at any of that footage and some of that behind the scenes stuff?
Well, interestingly, Nancy Pelosi's daughter had requested an interview with Matthew Perna, which we found, you know, to be sort of, it was kind of odd. It didn't really make any sense. And we were looking at that when we were trying to understand why the Department of Justice went so hard after Matthew Perna in some respects, right? Because there was a friend of his, Stephen Ayers, who was with him much of the time. And Stephen Ayers ended up testifying before the January 6th committee. And he did not get any jail time whatsoever. And yet they were pushing for years behind bars for Matthew Perna. And so we started to look a little bit at that, and we couldn't really find a good reason. And it was only part of our story. We weren't focused on it.
Right.
So I don't have a huge amount to say about that. But what I do think is most telling when I look at that whole situation with Nancy Pelosi, with her daughter being around and, you know, and all the rest of it. And being in these amazingly, key positions throughout. And she's not the only one. There were others.
I know.
What I know is this. Most people aren't aware that the chief of Capitol Police has to go to the Capitol Police board in order to request reinforcements. Even though he's on the board, he's not a voting member. The House Sergeant at Arms, the Senate Sergeant at Arms, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, these are the people that have that vote. And we know unequivocally that they voted against reinforcing and securing the Capitol. Stephen Sund, the head of Capitol Police, went to them not once, not three times, not five times, six separate times, right? We know that. And so we know that Nancy Pelosi chose not to secure the Capitol that day, right? And so, I mean, so is it just by chance then that her daughter just happens to be with her doing this film? I don't believe that. Can I prove that? No. Right. You know, I can't prove it. I can't prove it yet. But if I come across something, I certainly will take a close look.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that, and then we also have, we know that Milley and Nancy Pelosi and Pittman and all of these people have never been asked any questions because they had a January 6th committee hearing that was totally fraudulent. I hope a lot of people, I know my audience knows that Benny Thompson, he had already filed something against Donald Trump for January 6th before he was put on that committee. So the committee was fraudulent for that reason alone. But on top of that, nothing at the January 6th committee was not orchestrated for the production of convincing people. It was propaganda, pure propaganda. But we never had our say, and people don't realize. Nobody was allowed.
It wasn't just propaganda. It was like a Salem witch trial.
Right. And nobody was allowed to defend themselves. They weren't calling anyone up with exculpatory evidence. And there was plenty of it. Wasn't it just one sided? They weren't allowed. Nobody was allowed to give any story that didn't match the narrative.
That's correct. That's 100% correct. And, you know, you mentioned Pittman. Of course, you're referring to Yogananda Pittman, right? Yeah. Who was head of the intelligence arm of the Capitol Police, you know, who amazingly brings in some hardcore, really heavy hitting propagandists or political operatives, you know, in the months before January 6th, right? And they get rid of all these people. I talked to Congressman Loudermilk's office about this because they got rid of a whole bunch of people from, you know, the previous administration, and which would be Trump appointees, and they pushed people in out of the collection part of that office into the analysis part. Well, gee, we know what analysts do, right? I mean, sometimes like, oh yeah, Benghazi. I mean, let's write an analysis that the movie was responsible, even though everyone on the ground was screaming terrorist attack in real time. Right. But this is what we'll do. And so they move people into the analytical office of, you know, of intelligence at the Capitol Police. And, you know, lo and behold, somehow the information that people at the top needed to make real decisions about security never left that office.
Yeah.
You know, and Yogananda Pittman, the moment Steve Sunder's forced out right after January 6th, she takes over as acting chief, right? And she's there for 6 months, during which time she and the chief counsel of the Capitol Police refer all these January 6s for prosecution, right? So this is a critical moment because Capitol Police has jurisdiction. So they're the ones doing, referrals to DOJ. And what else happens? Okay, well, and once it's, they can't keep the pressure, right? It's like a pressure cooker. They can't keep the lid on it completely. So they move Yogananda Pittman out of there. And where does she go? Does she lose her pension? Does she lose her retirement? No. She goes instead to UC Berkeley, where she's now in charge of security. But here's the key thing that is so revealing. Tarik Johnson, the Capitol Police officer, 23 years. This is the guy who evacuated the Senate chamber. They put all those lives in his hands. He was in charge of that. Right. He's not some, you know, rookie. This is a very senior person, very well respected. And he says, who's sitting in the control room that day where you're supposed to be directing operations and response and everything else? It's not the operations chief. No, he wasn't there. It was Yogananda Pittman.
Exactly.
Who spent how much of her career on the street as a beat, you know, doing the job? None. Zero. Right. Absolutely zero. She's a political appointee.
Right.
So how come nobody wants to know? You've got officers screaming for orders, screaming for direction and guidance, screaming for backup. And what are they getting back? Nothing. Nothing. Because their head of operations isn't running this operation. It's instead a political appointee, Yogananda Pittman.
Yeah. And she has all kinds of ties to also to the mayor of D.C. that I found out also as well. This is a group of people that
Another charming woman.
Exactly. She wanted whatever would happen that day. But you know what? This is what happens with these swamp creatures is they fail up. What looks like a failure in every aspect of doing their job. And it's never incompetence. It's in my opinion, it's always they were put there to do that. Hey guys, thank you for watching the show. I just want to remind you yet again that we really need to be very cautious of what is going on with the economy, both here and internationally. Most of us know that the BRICS nations are looking for a gold-backed currency to dethrone the dollar being the world reserve currency. They have an event coming up on August 22nd. The BRICS nations are all going. There are also 13 other nations that would like to join the BRICS nations. And this is not something to not pay attention to. We have to make sure that you protect your savings. And that is why I have chosen Beverly Hills Precious Metals. That is where I have gotten my gold and silver. I leave it in a depository. I know it's there. I've replaced it with my savings. I've put there to make sure that I weather the storm no matter what, be it the central bank digital currency, the BRICS nations, the dollar goes into collapse, whatever may happen. I know 401k, IRA, backed by gold, as well as having my savings, at least an amount of my savings in gold, in the depository or sent to you at home, is the best way to make sure you maintain peace of mind and make sure that your savings and everything that you've earned is safe no matter what comes. We will get through this. All is not lost. America will return to greatness as it always has been. But between now and then, we have to be very smart and very cognizant of what's going on. So please go to Mel K Gold or go to the MelKShow.com partners page and go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals. And my friend Andrew will take care of you. He's got a great team. Gold is the way to go right now. And I know that no matter what, I'm safe. So please do that for yourselves. We really care about you here. You're more like family and friends. And I hear from all of you a lot. So I just want to make sure that you guys are doing something proactive to be prepared. All will be well, but take care of yourself now. Being prepared is always a good thing. It is the sheer lack of humanity that is so disturbing about this story. I heard that they are going to go after another 200 people, and that's not it. They would like to continue this. A young boy was just arrested who already has committed suicide. Matthew Perna, that you talked about, committed suicide, which people will see in the documentary. I believe that there are other people, but people have had also their marriages, their lives, their livelihoods, their businesses, they're all to defend themselves.
They're VA benefits, Mel. They're VA benefits. People like Jeremy Brown, you know, and other veterans.
He's been on my show a couple times. It's so disgusting. It's so sad.
And I'm not sure if Jeremy's benefits have been taken away because I don't believe that he was charged with, you know, sort of insurrection related charges. But they have said anyone who's charged with those kind of charges, they've revoked their benefits retroactively.
Ugh.
Right. And so they've taken away college loans for people's kids. They've taken away mortgages for people's houses. They've taken away medical care. Kids who were halfway through getting braces, you know, put in their mouths that now the family doesn't have the ability to pay for that anymore. I mean, they've taken the breadwinners out of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families. There's one guy who was sleeping in the park in D.C. because they're forcing people to go to D.C. for these trials. And
many of
them, their lives are destroyed. They've been destroyed in the media. They've been destroyed, you know, by the Justice Department. And they can't even afford to get to D.C.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's really the Department of Justice has left in its wake just a trail of blood and tears and destruction.
Yeah. And what I did also hear is that a lot of these people were convinced they were either, you know, mentally, emotionally, psychologically tortured to take plea deals. A lot of people took plea deals. They just wanted it to be over, all of that. I have heard from multiple people that took plea deals that were not told that if they took a plea deal, they would be on some kind of list for life. That would, it's kind of like being a sex offender, except for they're basically a domestic terrorist for life because they took the plea deal and they weren't told that up front. So, did you talk to any of them?
The way the Department of Justice is writing these plea deals, you had a guy like Matthew Perna charged with three nonviolent misdemeanors and one felony charge, which is the 1512 that they've slapped on hundreds of people, which is the charge, the felony charge of obstructing an official proceeding. Right. And so what Matthew was hoping for is, you know, everybody knows if you've got a felony on your record, you can never vote again. It follows you everywhere. And, you know, it makes your life in many ways unlivable. You can never own a gun and so on. So nobody wants a felony charge on their record. And Matthew Prunett's lawyer tried to get a misdemeanor plea deal. But the deal the Justice Department offered him got him to give up every right he would ever have, like the right to appeal, you know, in perpetuity. And it offered nothing. It offered absolutely nothing. So these deals, when people are pleading, they come with a lot of strings attached. They in many ways are violating the Constitution and the constitutional rights of people who are taking them. But of course, once you sign on the dotted line, they say, well, you agreed to it. Right. So, you know, therefore it's on you, but they're taking people who are not equipped to deal with this. If you're like Matthew Prunett, you know, some people have been in and out of trouble. Some people have been to prison. You got people of all walks of life who've been charged, but a lot of these people have never seen the inside of a jail cell, cannot imagine ever being there, don't even know what to do with that. I mean, we've got one guy, Baked Alaska is his podcast name, right? He's a social media influencer.
Yeah, I know him.
Yep. He was sentenced 60 days. Do you know he spent 30 days in solitary confinement?
It's psychological torture, but that's what I'm saying about a lot of these deals were done under duress and in crazy psychological operation mode of these people. And they don't have a background. A lot of these people didn't know, do not talk to cops. They're not your friends. Do not talk. You know, if you have a public defender, you got to be really careful because a lot of times their whole job is to get you to plea and you got to look, you got to read it yourself. You know, I think a lot of people were initially, especially the ones that were thrown into solitary, they were psychologically unable to even ascertain now, what was happening.
They're still being put in solitary. Trentis Evans, condemned USA, his sentence, he pled guilty to one Class A misdemeanor for entering a restricted building or area, right? His crime is so light that the judge has allowed him to serve out his sentence intermittently. So he's been checking into the prison in Houston every weekend, right? When he goes in there, they put him in solitary confinement. So his crime is so slight that he can come in and go to prison for the weekend and then go back to running his business and go home. And they put him in solitary confinement. He doesn't see a living soul from Friday when he checks in to Monday when he comes out. They open a slit, they put his food in there. I mean, he's in there with the cockroaches and his thoughts. You know, he said, I think last weekend, because he's got this kind of determination, I think he said he sang the national anthem over 250 times, over and over and over and over and over again, just to make whoever, whatever God there was that might be out there, just to try to make them crazy. You know, in fact, he's made a couple of videos about if you want to go to a place that's free of charge, has 24-hour service.
I know him. And you know, I've had on as many as I can. It's just, this is such, it's when we look back on history, this is going to be such a stain on our country. And these people do not care. And I frankly do not believe that it's any of them. But I when I was younger, I wrote a screenplay about Eichmann in Jerusalem. And I was following orders is never going to be okay. And I really will never understand the prosecutors and the FBI agents and the judges. These are not people that should have those positions. And maybe on the other side, we'll have some justice and take care of that a little bit. But I really applaud you because this has not been done for a reason. I think people were too scared to cover it. Luckily, you're not scared of anything. But I do want to say that we are in a very scary situation in the country because we watched January 6th happen, and now we have Donald Trump and 18 other people, mostly lawyers, that are, you know, whatever, they want to put them in jail by any means necessary. We have the electors in Michigan, most of them in their 70s and 80s. They want to put them in jail. It does seem that the Constitution has been suspended at this point in the United States of America on a grand scale, especially when it comes to federal court, but some of these smaller courts. So for you, somebody who's been covering this so long, and what's crazy about you is that you were a foreign correspondent that covered this in foreign countries that knew that this could never happen in America. And now it is. And I don't know if you saw Vladimir Putin talking about it. First of all, he is one of the only world leaders that has multiple times called out what is happening to the January 6th defendants. Think of him what you want. But there are leaders, including him, around the world who believe that what is happening to these people from January 6th is evil and is criminal and is exactly opposite of what the Constitution is supposed to say. But we are at a place where Putin just, I think 2 days ago in a speech, said something about the corruption of our DOJ and our quote unquote judicial system, and that these Americans and Blinken and Biden and all of them especially go around the world telling everyone else how they should live and what's wrong with their countries mm-hmm. and how corrupt. Mm-hmm. And they're still doing it now all over Africa and wherever they can go and stick their noses in. And meanwhile, it's us that now is the problem. So just ending on that, as having been in nations all over the world, you've been in color revolutions, you've been in regime change overthrows in communist countries. I mean, that was your life as one of the best journalists in our nation. To imagine that it's in your own country now must be really a very surreal experience for you.
It is surreal and devastating at the same time. And you know what it reminds me of, Mel, when one of my very close friends was the former vice president of Afghanistan. He's in fact the interim president of the country. And before, you know, the ultimate betrayal and legacy of shame, when we gave that country to terrorists and participated in the murder of all of our allies and friends there, he said to me once on the phone, "Lara, what is happening over there?" Because people could see, they were like, "Wow, this is long before January 6th." And he said, he listened to my answer, and then he said, "You know," he said, "this is very serious," because he said, "America is the light for the world." Right. And if the light goes out there, the light of freedom goes out in America, it means the whole world goes dark. And that is where we are, right? I mean, that's very, very true. I didn't know at the time that one of the darkest things that we would ever do as a nation would be what we did to those people in Afghanistan, and that is still being done to this day. I wake up, I have sometimes fear in my heart when I open my phone, because I know there's going to be another photograph. It's going to be another face. Yeah. And it's a police officer or, you know, a soldier who we trained and worked with, or an intelligence person that we trained. And they're still dying because of us. And those women who we said we would not abandon, those women, we came in there with all those NGOs that went in there and they said, "Look, you can be free and women can have rights." And, you know, and all of that, those people from USAID and all those other agencies, right, that said, "Oh, you know, look, and this is how it should be." And then you just turned your back, you turned off the lights, you plunged them into darkness, you handed over their biometrics, and now you're financing them. Yes. Now you're using our tax dollars.
Financing
to
them.
They're
sending $6 billion to Iran in a 5x5 prisoner swap. No, we are captured nation. It's funny what you just said. I've been saying a lot lately on my show, you know, Trump always says they're not after me, they're after you, to the crowd. I say they're not after America, they're after the world. America's standing in the way. And the very scary part is that what is going on January 6th and what you are covering, and what I know everyone's going to watch it no matter what, but what I implore everyone to do is not only watch Lara's series and of course all her work, but this January 6th series is going to be monumental in opening a lot of eyes. Share it with everyone and anyone, because I am telling you right now that there's some kind of internal, I believe we are in a color revolution, but this is to humiliate and shame and destroy America from within in the eyes of the rest
and
of the
silence.
World.
And silence. Silence America, right?
Yes, yes. They have
and
who to wants silence to be, us.
Who wants to be friends with us? Who wants to walk into battle with us? The people that walked into battle with us for 20 years, we slit their throats and handed them to their enemies.
And look at what we're doing to our own people for exercising their constitutional right to protest. And you know what's great? Yeah, go ahead.
Trenis is in the cell. I believe of an Islamic terrorist, where quite a well-known Islamic terrorist was held in this jail in Houston. Right. So you can imagine an American citizen is in the same cell where you put foreign terrorists. Really?
Yep.
They treated foreign terrorists at Guantanamo Bay better than they treated the January 6th defendants.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Enrique right before his last day of trial, and he was talking about that they were treating him like, first of all, he was with terrorists, but these guys, the guys that got seditious conspiracy, are going to be treated worse than Charles Manson, and they already are, or real Islamic terrorists. And they are actually, this same regime is making deals with people that are Islamic terrorists to let them go while they are doubling down on these guys. But I'm telling you, there is a situation where the whole world is watching this nation, and these people that are behind this do not care. They are post-America. They have no allegiance to we the people. They have no allegiance to our flag or our nation. And they are doing this to humiliate and destroy our nation. And they are taking these people's lives with them. And it is absolutely disgusting. And thank God you are standing up for it. Lara, please tell people where they can find it, how they can find it, how it's going to play out over the next several weeks, and also where they can follow, find, and support you. Please, everyone, support what Lara and Ben are doing. Is they are creating a model outside of the system that cannot be controlled, but that will give you the same quality content that you were used to on Dateline and 60 Minutes and all of that, but this time it won't be edited out. So we really need to support their journey and their mission, because we all know how much we've learned from those programs, but we need to create them ourselves. And Lara has taken that on. So go ahead and tell people about the series, how to find it, how to follow it, and how to support you.
Thank you, Mel. It's going to drop. We'll have weekly episodes that drop on a Thursday, and you can always find it on Truth and Media on Twitter, but it will also be on my site, on, you know, Lara Logan on Twitter. And we are going to give it to anybody who wants to stream it, right? It's free. It's free to use, free to air. And so you will be seeing it all over the place.
Great. Great. So everyone that has a channel, big or small, you know, really share this stuff, share it everywhere. It is very, very vital, because what you're talking about all the people left behind in Afghanistan, and you have been a true champion for that. I had on your friend. I couldn't believe it. There are still people running from safe house to safe house there. We, the people, cannot allow January 6th, because Lara, the one thing, if we don't start standing up, because one thing I do know about January 6th is there were a lot of people there that weren't Trump supporters, that were really for election integrity, people that were on the left, people that were libertarians, Bernie Sanders voters that are now RFK Jr. voters. It was not a Trump event. People are wrong. It was a fair, free, honest election event more than anything else. And we got to fight for that. We got 2024 coming up. They will do anything they can to stop us and silence us. Please follow Lara Logan. Please support the show. Share it everywhere. She's done incredible work before. She will again. But we really do need to fill the void of a 60 Minutes type show that tells a whole story with all the ins and outs, all the flavor, everything you want to see, things you don't want to see, but tells it in a narrative that will stand the test of time. And Lara Logan has stepped up to be that person to make that happen. So thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Mel.
I will see you on the road. Keep up the great work. And I really appreciate it. We do need, you know, there's not that many people that have done what you've done in your decades of work that are now picking up the mantle and finding and raising the money and pulling together the crew and convincing everyone that they will not, their lives will continue. A lot of people are still scared in your business of being canceled, being this and that. And you know, you're attracting the best of the best, because you are the best of the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mel. Thank you.
You've learned a lot more about January 6th. You talked to hundreds of defendants. What have you learned?
Well, first I've learned about pain.
I believe in my nephew. I am proud of him. He was just larger than life.
We wanted to come and kind of just share what really happened today.
He had never been in trouble before in his life, so this was just so overwhelming. I was sitting in my home, and I got a call from his uncle.
What did he say?
They robbed him of his hope, his will to live. They took his fight away from him.
They broke him.
They completely broke him, and they broke his heart.
It's hard to find the truth these days, and it's needed now more than ever. We've traveled the country to bring you honest, accurate reporting
Bottom line, Laura, if they didn't want people going to the Capitol, they didn't want people even getting close to the Capitol, it never would have happened. It happened because they wanted to happen.
No one was stopping you.
This is the government we're talking about, okay? Like, they have, like, nukes and F-15s. They can do whatever they want to stop average people like me.
34-year-old Roseanne Boylan was one of four people killed.
This was a woman who got pushed down, smothered, trampled, and then beaten.
Had this been covered at all by anyone else in the media?
No.
They named me as one of the insurrectionists that was preventing the cops from rescuing her.
Was that true?
Absolutely not. This crutch was right at my feet, and I put it above my head, and I said, in the name of Jesus, Lord, please stop this.
Jeremy was at the Capitol providing security.
I mean, he's quite literally the poster boy for the special forces.
When you were arrested, they never sat you down and said, is this yours?
No, because they're the same officer that recruited me on December 9th of 2020.
From Department of Homeland Security.
The same two guys.
These people are hiding all of this information, and judges have let them get away with that.
You could be here forever.
I'll be here as long as the American people leave me here.
I'm Laura Logan with the rest of the story. Join us.
As you know, I love Mike Lindell. He's been a pal of mine and a supporter of the show. And honestly, he is a warrior for America. He is not giving up on this country. He is not giving up on you. He's not giving up on freedom and truth and justice. And that means that you should be going to MyPillow because so much is going on over there. Two pillows for $19.98, giant sale for the 20th anniversary. There's an overstock sale for 80% off, which is awesome. He loved the slippers. Well, everyone loves the dog beds. Everyone, there's so much over there. And what you have to know, I love Mike Lindell. We have been all over the country with this man. He is a tireless warrior for America, for God, for country, for truth, and for justice. He is not giving up. He has an event coming up. Again, he has a whole nother event. He has got more evidence. He's going to keep fighting. He's going to keep going. That means that you have to also support him. But the best part about him is he supports me and other creators, and it really matters. He's keeping a lot of truth out there by giving me a code called the Mel K code. So if you go to themelkshow.com, go to our partners page, scroll down, you hit the My Pillow, you're going to take you right to the Mel K page. Use the Mel K code when checking out. It really, really makes a difference. I can't tell you guys how much I am so grateful to all of you. Everyone that have donated or gone to my partners, they are all vetted. They are all America first. Mike Lindell is an amazing man. We need to support his mission, and you guys supporting him and supporting me and using the Mel K code is really making a huge difference. There are so many, so many great things on that site. I will tell you, these are the best towels on planet Earth. Great specials right now. They're always doing something great over there. Support me, support Mike Lindell, support the United States of America. Enjoy the show, and I'll see you on the other side. For months and months, me and Mike L have been talking about the water supply, what is in there. There are pharmaceuticals in the water supply. There are all these chemicals, lots of pollution. We've had all these natural disasters that leave our water not nearly as clean and certainly not as God intended. We know how important water is for our health. So we have been on a mission to try to find the best alternative to the water that is out there, including bottled water, which of course, we did a whole show on everything that's in bottled water, which is almost as shocking as what's in our natural water now. So we found the best partner we could in Healthy Hydrogen. This is a portable bottle that I use all the time, but also there are many options over there. You can get a full house system. You can get a tabletop system. You can get for your shower, for your office and business. They have so many great options. If you go to themelkshow.com, we have partnered with them. So it's on our partners page, Healthy Hydrogen. I am telling you right now, the difference in this water and what it will do to your health in general is incredible. If you have inflammation, your immune system has problems, anything that you are thinking you don't know the solution for, this could be the game changer. We've been looking for the missing piece, and I believe the missing piece is the water. We are so excited. They have so much science backing all of their products. They have been tested by all different groups out there that do this for a living and look at water really in depth. We have the hydrogen aspect, which is truly fascinating. Nothing is more important than water. We all know that. So make sure you're putting the best water in your body. And I assure you, this is a true, true game changer that you will see right away and will improve your health and your family's health going forward. Go check out the Mel K Show partners page, Healthy Hydrogen, and get your health back from the inside out, starting with God's great water. We will see you soon. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the show.